College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
How many people saw my monologue on Almanac last night? Raise your hand. Raise your hand. Well, keep one hand on the steering wheel. Raise your other hand. If you were watching TPT last night, their historic political show Almanac was on, as it is every Friday night at 7. And I don't know if you saw my monologue, but it was a tongue-in-cheek look at what happens when people have unique names and they send their resumes in and they apply for jobs and they get rejected. Well, one man, Dwight Johnson, with a name like Dwight Johnson, you think of The Rock. That ought to get your resume to the top of the pile, right? Wrong. Very wrong. Dwight Johnson lives in Michigan, applied for a job, and was rejected. And so he had a sneaky suspicion that they rejected him because Dwight Johnson sounds like the name of a black man. So this man, same qualifications, same address, same phone number, same experience, same educational background, changing nothing on his resume except his name, to John Jabrowski. And guess what happened, y'all? He got hired. And that took me back to a time in my early career days, right after I graduated from college. Got a job at a small radio station and small TV station down south. And Shaletta was just way too much for everybody. You got to change your name. It's too many syllables. It's too ethnic. Mm-hmm. And nobody is going to watch someone on TV named Shaletta. Nobody is going to listen to someone named Shaletta. You want to build credibility with the people that you're trying to reach. And a name like Shaletta, well, are you saying that a name like Shaletta sounds like I'm not educated? I just got this degree. I just paid my first student loan payment. I went up to New York, got an internship, came back, got enough experience to get this job. And y'all want me to change my name? And I thought about it because I'm thinking, I'm talking to people who've been in the business for a while. They're more experienced than me. But then I thought about a lady named Oprah. And this was at the height of her stardom, when her show was just banging and everybody was watching it. And people were planning their lives and their days around that show so they wouldn't miss it. And I thought, you know what? If it's good enough for Oprah, it's good enough for me. And so I think Shaletta worked out pretty well. But what about the other Shalettas? What about the other Oprahs whose resumes, like Dwight Johnson, kept getting rejected over and over and over again? And so I said, well, we ought to talk about this, because this is an issue about inclusion. This is an issue about equity. So I brought the diversity dude, Lambert Fisher, on the show. He has been a frequent guest on WCCO Radio. He is joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Lambert, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Shaletta. Glad to be here.
Now, you have to give me your take. What were your first thoughts when you saw the story of Dwight Johnson, who went to get this job, did not get it, changed his name on his resume, and got the offer he was looking for?
Well, my first thought, as with a lot of situations like this, is still, are we still dealing with this? You think that's something that only happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15, maybe, and yet it's still reminiscent of things that are happening over the country today. And the motivations may change. It may not be as overt, as obvious, as out there and people conscious of what they're doing. But the fact is, there's still biases, sometimes conscious biases, sometimes unconscious biases, influencing things. And sometimes even a name can do it. It's not like there's a list of what names are acceptable and what names are not. But names conjure up certain visual images. And if there are images before you even walk in the room that people have, certain assumptions people have, and they're not positive, then it can negatively impact how how they treat you. And here's just another example of somebody who could be perfectly capable, perfectly suitable, a great person, an asset to the team, but they may not get the chance because somebody's bias has gotten away. So just another reminder of some things we have to overcome and some strategies we have to put into place to change that.
Okay, now you talk a lot about strategies. You talk a lot about unconscious and conscious biases. How does that play in this particular situation?
Well, a lot of this is all speculation, of course, because you don't have the official person looking at that resume to truly analyze an interview. But it's so frequent that you do have a lot of experience. Research shows that when they do have situations like this, the answers that they find in high percentages are, well, I had certain experiences in the past with certain groups, and I formed these pictures in my head. Sometimes I had no experience whatsoever. I just saw movies. I just saw social media. I just saw the popular thing. And even though I have no good or bad experiences, the guesses and the conclusions that I make from what I've seen or heard are so not positive that I just don't want to take the risk. You know what? I just want to go with what's safe. Go with what I know. The only problem with it is if you only go with what you know, you'll never gain those experiences. You'll never experience things outside of your own and be pleasantly surprised and say, oh, that's not what I saw in a movie. That's not what I saw on a TV show in a song or from I heard from cousin so-and-so. Things aren't always what other people tell me that they are. And so the goal is to be able to branch out and gain new experiences for yourself and realize, oh, this person can be a great friend. This person can be a great coworker. This person can be a great asset and develop those experiences yourself. But we don't often do that nearly enough to change those experiences.
I know that you are going over to Alina soon to talk to the team over there about these unconscious and cultural biases. And that's something that you do. You have a best-selling, award-winning book, Diversity in Clinical Practice. And it's, you know, it was designed to help other therapists and clinicians. But, you know, my son's middle school has copies, you know, teachers and church leaders and so many other people are using this book as a tool and a guide to eliminate some of those conscious as well as unconscious biases. But you also do trainings for entire teams and C-suites. And when you start talking about strategies, people are going to have to put some strategies and some rules or something in place so that this does not keep happening, because I don't want my kids to have to worry about what they name their kids 30 years from now when they start having kids because they're worried about how they'll be perceived by a potential boss. So talk to me about some of those trainings that you do, because there's some people who are listening that I'm sure their companies, organizations, or groups could benefit from that.
It's very true. And unfortunately, a lot of times when I get called in, I get there and get told so many times that they're scared, they're angry to be called into yet another mandated diversity training. And it's usually because they have past experiences of somebody telling them all the ways they're doing wrong. And if you don't already know this, you must be a racist, a sexist, and every other kind of istinism out there. And that's kind of what goes into these HR resume kind of situations in the first place, because, well, clearly the person who read that resume was a racist. Let's find them, fire them, and find out, and root out anybody else like that. And unfortunately, that's not always the best strategy, because there are oftentimes that's the case. That is unfortunate. It is real, and we have to address that. But oftentimes, they're not conscious over biases and beliefs. They're subconscious. They're unconscious biases, and we need to try to increase our cultural self-awareness as well as our other awareness, and learn, identify, how do I see myself? How do I see other people? How do I see the difference between those? And if we do it from a non-judgmental perspective, we can come in and get past the barriers and the guards, and I can protect myself from awareness and instead say, how can I learn to appreciate the differences between me and other people as opposed to be inconvenienced by them? How can I understand the assets variety of perspectives can bring to the team and say, you know what, it's convenient to have people who look like me because it's a lot less work, but it's also kind of boring sometimes because we all have the same ideas and brainstorming is kind of boring. But, you know, having different blood in there, different perspectives, different experiences, it can actually make us all better. It can make the services we offer better. It can make the camaraderie around the office better. We can lift each other up, because differences can be a great thing, but we're not often having those conversations. And when I start out that way, then you get a lot more buy-in. The HR folks are like, hey, we haven't had trainings like this before. And the impact it has long term, way beyond a few hours of training, it can change the culturally safe environment to generate new conversations, safe questions that can be asked, and the whole company benefits and the whole community benefits as a result.
Okay, so somebody just DM me and they want to know how they can find you to sign up for some of these trainings for their team. Where do they go?
Well, there's two places you can go. The easiest one is the main title of my training is Diversity Made Simple. I like to make it demystify, destigmatize all that scary stuff out to say DiversityMadeSimple.com. But also, speaking of unique names, my name can also be used as well, LambertsFisher.com. One of the things that has worked out in a way that gets me past that, and just to shock them with some hard truths afterwards, with because nobody knows what Lambert is. They don't know whether I'm male, female, old, young. So I don't get some of those stigmas because they don't know how to stigmatize me. They don't know which way to be upset about me. So if you look up LambertsFisher.com or Diversity Made Simple, you'll get me. And then once I get past that barrier, then I hit them with a lot of hard truths and do it in a way that makes them appreciate it as a result. To say, huh, that was hard. That was deep. That was difficult, but I liked it. I appreciated that. Do you have any more? And that's not something people usually have on the sensitive and angry topic of diversity. I want to make people want to learn more as opposed to judge them into learning more, scare them into learning more, or resent them into learning more. And that way we can all benefit, those who are offering the services and those who are receiving the services, no matter what service we're providing, because we're all people who want to be seen and heard and valued and not turned away because of assumptions made on a resume name.
All right. Now, I know you got stuff to do, but I want you to stick around after this commercial break because I still can't get over former President Donald Trump in his debate with President Joe Biden talked about black jobs. That stung me. And now it's trending on social media. Hashtag black jobs. And we're going to talk about why, what it means, and what it said to people of color with Lambert Fisher when we come back. It was a bad thing. It was insulting. Donald Trump warned during his debate with Joe Biden and again at a rally that migrants were taking quote-unquote black jobs and Hispanic jobs from Americans. And critics said that's racist and insulting. And you know who else said it? Black people and Hispanic people. To insinuate that there are such a thing as black jobs or Hispanic jobs. Like that's all we can, like there's only certain jobs that we should have. We just talked about in the segment before about a black man trying to get a job and couldn't until he changed his name to something that sounded a little less black. So I asked Lambert Fisher to stay with us. I know he is busy. He's doing workshops and trainings all over the country. Diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings in a non-biased, non-threatening way. He's got this award-winning book that folks are buying up and giving to their team and then having him come in and teach from that book. Lambert, I need your perspective on this because I tell you that stung. As hard as black and Hispanic people in this country have worked to not only build up this country, but build up their families. You know, you hardly ever hear anybody saying I'm a first generation college student. At this point, we're in our third, some four, some five generations of college students in a family, multiple doctors, multiple lawyers, owning our own business. Black women are the fastest group of business owners, fastest growing group of business owners in this country, building generational wealth for our families. And to hear something like this, for me, I thought, you know, this sends us right back to the cotton field.
Yes, and that's what impact it often has. As a therapist, I usually stay out of the reading people's minds category, and so we can try to speculate all we want about what he actually thought and he can defend it, but I focus more on the impact that it has, what people think he thinks and what he thinks he feels and how it impacts them, because when you have someone who is trying to be trying to get back to the highest position in our country, setting a standard for conveying that, hey, either you think we still live in that time period when there were only certain jobs we could have, or you want to get back to that time period, or the fact is that's how you see it as being already right now, is a scary perspective. And when you have people trying to fight hard to distance themselves from that past and to show it, to earn it, not just with talk, but with words, and to believe that we've already gotten to that point, it hits people hard. It hits people in a negative, defensive, protective kind of way, because at any point in time, it can make it seem like you are going to have to defend that position. People are going to try to go back to that, and that's unacceptable.
And, you know, what kind of impact is this going to have for the person who, you know, used to be the president of the United States, to say something like this to the nation? Talk to me about the impact, because words matter and perspective and perception matter, especially when it's coming from a position of authority.
Well, just like we were talking about with the resumes and unconscious bias, when people are trying to show with their actions through earned degrees, earned job experiences, that they deserve to be in positions of influence and positions of power to a certain degree, there are people who have historically been in those positions who have the power to either change up from the norm, from the way things have always been, and allow new perspective, only to realize it was a great choice at the end, or to say, you know what, we're uncomfortable with that. This isn't a job for you. You guys aren't supposed to be here. When you have the leader, leader of the free world, agreeing with you and say, hey, well, I'm not just saying it. Everyone's saying it, because if the person at the top is saying it, then it can have a trickle-down impact. And when you think about him saying something like that, the insulting piece is not just how dare you say that there are jobs that are held by black people. It's like, no, it's not just some wordplay. It's suggesting that there are certain jobs, certain lower-level jobs, from his perspective, certain jobs that aren't as high as other people. Because he's not saying that. And says, you know what, those black jobs, like the president, you know, from thinking of Barack Obama, like doctors, lawyers, you know, they're taking your jobs. They're taking your lawyer jobs, your doctor jobs, your politician jobs. He didn't say that. That's not what was conveyed. It was like, you know, those little jobs. So he didn't say, you know, they're taking our jobs. He said they're taking your jobs, as if there's a distinction, if there's a divide, and there's enough division in this country to perpetuate more of it. It's not bringing us closer to where we need to be. And when we have people trying to defend that, then it's also separating us more than bringing us together.
Lambert Fisher, thank you so much for joining us. You can find him at lambertfisher.com. That's where you can sign up to have him do your diversity training. Also, check out his book and his podcast, The Diversity Dude. How many people saw my monologue on Almanac last night? Raise your hand. Raise your hand. Well, keep one hand on the steering wheel. Raise your other hand. If you were watching TPT last night, their historic political show Almanac was on, as it is every Friday night at 7. And I don't know if you saw my monologue, but it was a tongue-in-cheek look at what happens when people have unique names. And they send their resumes in. And they apply for jobs. And they get rejected. Well, one man, Dwight Johnson, with a name like Dwight Johnson, you think of The Rock. That ought to get your resume to the top of the pile, right? Wrong. Very wrong. Dwight Johnson lives in Michigan, applied for a job, and was rejected. And so he had a sneaky suspicion that they rejected him because Dwight Johnson sounds like the name of a black man. So this man, same qualifications, same address, same phone number, same experience, same educational background, changing nothing on his resume except his name, to John Jabrowski. And guess what happened, y'all? He got hired. And that took me back to a time in my early career days, right after I graduated from college. Got a job at a small radio station and small TV station down south. And Shaletta was just way too much for everybody. Oh, my God. You got to change your name. There's too many syllables. It's too ethnic. Mm-hmm. And nobody is going to watch someone on TV named Shaletta. Nobody is going to listen to someone named Shaletta. You want to build credibility with the people that you're trying to reach. And a name like Shaletta, well, are you saying that a name like Shaletta sounds like I'm not educated? I just got this degree. I just paid my first student loan payment. I went up to New York, got an internship, came back, got enough experience to get this job. and y'all want me to change my name? And I thought about it because I'm thinking, I'm talking to people who've been in the business for a while. They're more experienced than me. But then I thought about a lady named Oprah. And this was at the height of her stardom, when her show was just banging and everybody was watching it. And people were planning their lives and their days around that show so they wouldn't miss it. And I thought, you know what? If it's good enough for Oprah, it's good enough for me. And so I think Shaletta worked out pretty well. But what about the other Shalettas? What about the other Oprahs whose resumes, like Dwight Johnson, kept getting rejected over and over and over again? And so I said, well, we ought to talk about this because this is an issue about inclusion. This is an issue about equity. So I brought the diversity dude, Lambert Fisher, on the show. He has been a frequent guest on WCCO Radio. He is joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Lambert, thank you so much for being here.
Good morning, Shaletta. Glad to be here.
Now, you have to give me your take. What were your first thoughts when you saw the story of Dwight Johnson, who went to get this job, did not get it, changed his name on his resume, and got the offer he was looking for?
Well, my first thought, as with a lot of situations like this, is still, are we still dealing with this? You think that's something that only happened 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15, maybe, and yet it's still reminiscent of things that are happening over the country today. And the motivations may change. It may not be as overt, as obvious, as out there and people conscious of what they're doing. But the fact is there's still biases, sometimes conscious biases, sometimes unconscious biases, influencing things. And sometimes even a name can do it. It's not like there's a list of what names are acceptable and what names are not. But names conjure up certain visual images. And if there are images before you even walk in the room that people have, certain assumptions people have, they're not positive, then it can negatively impact how they treat you. And here's just another example of somebody who could be perfectly capable, perfectly suitable, a great person, an asset to the team, but they may not get the chance because somebody's bias has gotten away. So just another reminder of some things we have to overcome and some strategies we have to put into place to change that.
Okay. Now, you talk a lot about strategies. You talk a lot about unconscious and conscious biases. How does that play in this particular situation?
Well, a lot of this is all speculation, of course, because you don't have the official person looking at that resume to truly analyze an interview. But it's so frequent that you do have a lot of experience. Research shows that when they do have situations like this, the answers that they find in high percentages are, well, I had certain experiences in the past with certain groups, and I formed these pictures in my head. Sometimes I had no experience whatsoever. I just saw movies. I just saw social media. I just saw the popular thing. And even though I have no good or bad experiences, the guesses and the conclusions that I make from what I've seen or heard are so not positive that I just don't want to take the risk. You know what? I just want to go with what's safe. Go with what I know. The only problem with this is if you only go with what you know, you'll never gain those experiences. You'll never experience things outside of your own and be pleasantly surprised and say, oh, that's not what I saw in a movie. That's not what I saw on a TV show, in a song, or from I heard from cousin so-and-so. Things aren't always what other people tell me that they are. And so the goal is to be able to branch out and gain new experiences for yourself and realize, oh, this person can be a great friend. This person can be a great coworker. This person can be a great asset, and develop those experiences yourself. But we don't often do that nearly enough to change those experiences.
I know that you are going over to Alina soon to talk to the team over there about these unconscious and cultural biases. And that's something that you do. You have a best-selling, award-winning book, Diversity in Clinical Practice. And it's, you know, it was designed to help other therapists and clinicians. But, you know, my son's middle school has copies, you know, teachers and church leaders and so many other people are using this book as a tool and a guide to eliminate some of those conscious as well as unconscious biases. But you also do trainings for entire teams and C-suites. And when you start talking about strategies, people are going to have to put some strategies and some rules or something in place so that this does not keep happening, because I don't want my kids to have to worry about what they name their kids 30 years from now when they start having kids, because they're worried about how they'll be perceived by a potential boss. So talk to me about some of those trainings that you do, because there's some people who are listening that I'm sure their companies, organizations, or groups could benefit from that.
It's very true. And unfortunately, a lot of times when I get called in, I get there and get told so many times that they're scared, they're angry to be called into yet another mandated diversity training. And it's usually because they have past experiences of somebody telling them all the ways they're doing wrong. And if you don't already know this, you must be a racist, a sexist, and every other kind of istinism out there. And that's kind of what goes into these HR resume kind of situations in the first place, because, well, clearly the person who read that resume was a racist. Let's find them, fire them, and find out, and root out anybody else like that. And unfortunately, that's not always the best strategy, because there oftentimes that's the case. That is unfortunate. It is real, and we have to address that. But oftentimes, they're not conscious over biases and beliefs. They're subconscious. They're unconscious biases, and we need to try to increase our cultural self-awareness as well as our other awareness, and learn, identify, how do I see myself? How do I see other people? How do I see the difference between those? And if we do it from a non-judgmental perspective, we can come in and get past the barriers and the guards, and I can protect myself from awareness and instead say, how can I learn to appreciate the differences between me and other people as opposed to be inconvenienced by them? How can I understand the assets variety of perspectives can bring to the team and say, you know what, it's convenient to have people who look like me because it's a lot less work, but it's also kind of boring sometimes because we all have the same ideas and brainstorming is kind of boring. But, you know, having different blood in there, different perspectives, different experiences, it can actually make us all better. It can make the services we offer better. It can make the camaraderie around the office better. We can lift each other up, because differences can be a great thing, but we're not often having those conversations. And when I start out that way, then you get a lot more buy-in. The HR folks are like, hey, we haven't had trainings like this before. And the impact it has long term, way beyond a few hours of training, it can change the culturally safe environment to generate new conversations, safe questions that can be asked, and the whole company benefits and the whole community benefits as a result.
Okay, so somebody just DM me and they want to know how they can find you to sign up for some of these trainings for their team. Where do they go?
Well, there's two places you can go. The easiest one is the main title of my training is Diversity Made Simple. I like to make it demystified, destigmatized, all that scary stuff out, to say diversitymadesimple.com. But also, speaking of unique names, my name can also be used as well, lambertsfisher.com. One of the things that has worked out in a way that gets me past that, just to shock them with some hard truths afterwards, but because nobody knows what Lambert is. They don't know whether I'm male, female, old, young. So I don't get some of those stigmas because they don't know how to stigmatize me. They don't know which way to be upset about me. So if you look up lambertsfisher.com or Diversity Made Simple, you'll get me. And then once I get past that barrier, then I hit them with a lot of hard truths and do it in a way that makes them appreciate it as a result. To say, huh, that was hard. That was deep. That was difficult, but I liked it. I appreciated that. Do you have any more? And that's not something people usually have on the sensitive and angry topic of diversity. I want to make people want to learn more as opposed to judge them into learning more, scare them into learning more, or resent them into learning more. And that way we can all benefit, those who are offering the services and those who are receiving the services, no matter what service we're providing, because we're all people who want to be seen and heard and valued and not turned away because of assumptions made on a resume name.
All right. Now, I know you got stuff to do, but I want you to stick around after this commercial break, because I still can't get over former President Donald Trump in his debate with President Joe Biden talked about black jobs. That stung me. And now it's trending on social media. Hashtag black jobs. And we're going to talk about why, what it means, and what it said to people of color with Lambert Fisher when we come back. It was a bad thing. It was insulting. Donald Trump warned during his debate with Joe Biden and again at a rally that migrants were taking quote unquote black jobs and Hispanic jobs from Americans. And critics said that's racist and insulting. And you know who else said it? Black people and Hispanic people. To insinuate that there are such a thing as black jobs or Hispanic jobs. Like that's all we can. Like there's only certain jobs that we should have. We just talked about in the segment before about a black man trying to get a job and couldn't until he changed his name to something that sounded a little less black. So I asked Lambert Fisher to stay with us. I know he is busy. You know, he's doing workshops and trainings all over the country. Diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings in a non-biased, non-threatening way. He's got this award-winning book that folks are buying up and giving to their team and then having him come in and teach from that book. Lambers, I need your perspective on this because I tell you that stung. As hard as black and Hispanic people in this country have worked to not only build up this country, but build up their families. You know, you hardly ever hear anybody saying I'm a first generation college student. At this point, we're in our third, some four, some five generations of college students in a family, multiple doctors, multiple lawyers, owning our own business. Black women are the fastest group of business owners, fastest growing group of business owners in this country, building generational wealth for our families. And to hear something like this, for me, I thought, you know, this sends us right back to the cotton field.
Yes, and that's what impact it often has. As a therapist, I usually stay out of the reading people's minds category. And so we can try to speculate all we want about what he actually thought and he can defend it. But I focus more on the impact that it has, what people think he thinks and what he thinks he feel and how it impacts them. Because when you have someone who is trying to be try to get back to the highest position in our country, setting a standard for conveying that, hey, either you think we still live in that time period when there were only certain jobs we could have, or you want to get back to that time period, or the fact that that's how you see it as being already right now, is a scary perspective. And when you have people trying to fight hard to distance themselves from that past and to show it, to earn it, not just with talk, but with words, and to believe that we've already gotten to that point, it hits people hard. It hits people in a negative, defensive, protective kind of way, because at any point in time, it can make it seem like you are going to have to defend that position. People are going to try to go back to that, and that's unacceptable.
And, you know, what kind of impact is this going to have for the person who, you know, used to be the president of the United States to say something like this to the nation? Talk to me about the impact, because words matter and perspective and perception matter, especially when it's coming from a position of authority.
Well, just like we were talking about with the resumes and unconscious bias, when people are trying to show with their actions through earned degrees, earned job experiences, that they deserve to be in positions of influence and positions of power to a certain degree, there are people who have historically been in those positions who have the power to either change up from the norm, from the way things have always been, and allow new perspective, only to realize it was a great choice at the end, or to say, you know what, we're uncomfortable with that. This isn't a job for you. You guys aren't supposed to be here. When you have the leader, the potential leader of the free world agreeing with you and say, hey, well, I'm not just saying it. Everyone's saying it, because if the person at the top is saying it, then they can have a trickle-down impact. And when you think about him saying something like that, the insulting piece is not just how dare you say that there are jobs that are held by black people. It's like, no, it's not just some wordplay. It's suggesting that there are certain jobs, certain lower-level jobs, from his perspective, certain jobs that aren't as high as other people. Because he's not saying that and says, you know what, those black jobs, like the president, you know, from thinking of Barack Obama, like doctors, lawyers, you know, they're taking your jobs. They're taking your lawyer jobs, your doctor jobs, your politician jobs. He didn't say that. That's not what was conveyed. It was like, you know, those little jobs. So he didn't say, you know, they're taking our jobs. He said they're taking your jobs, as if there's a distinction, if there's a divide, and there's enough division in this country to perpetuate more of it. It's not bringing us closer to where we need to be. And when we have people try to defend that, then it's also separating us more than bringing us together.
Lambert Fisher, thank you so much for joining us. You can find him at LambertFisher.com. That's where you can sign up to have him do your diversity training. Also, check out his book and his podcast, The Diversity Dude.